from the Cow Creek Tribe, Brighton Reservation, and his beautiful wife, Lottie, and their granddaughter, Polly Billing. I suppose the first time they came, I'm just guessing, was back in 1958 with Albert and Jessie Bell Devane from Lake Placid, truly the friends of the Seminole Indians. They came for many years with them and brought Norhaw Tiger, Billy Bowlegs, Josie Billy, well, Lottie, and Frank, and all their children. Now, I asked them if they'd like to say a few words, and you know how they are. They don't run their mouths like we do all the time. No. But I do want to tell you one beautiful little thing about Polly and Lottie. Polly is the great, great, great granddaughter of a very famous Seminole. At the end of the Seminole Wars, she was captured and put on a boat in Tampa Bay on Nylon there, and then loaded on the boat to be shipped to Oklahoma. She was torn from the bosom of her husband and her children, and she never saw them again. Well, the boat was heavy laden, and it went up the Gulf of Mexico to St. Marks. And there they stopped to refuel. It was a wood-burning boat. And Polly and a very small handful asked permission to go ashore and gather herbs for the sick. Well, permission was reluctantly granted, and you know what happened. The minute their feet hit the ground, they were gone. And the military had better sense than to try to find them. So they went on without them. Now, you know how Florida's shaped like this, and right up there in that corner, about 500 miles, I'd guess, from there back down to the Everglades. But hiding by day and traveling by night, and living off the land, that courageous little band made their way all the way back down to the Everglades. Now, on the way, Polly got sick. And she begged them to leave her because she was slowing up the party, so. But they didn't do that. They made a litter and carried her until she was able to walk. And down in the Everglades, they joined with the little band who had hidden way back in the recesses of the Everglades. And together, they put life back together and began to live anew. Everything they had was destroyed. But Polly married again, and today, living on the reservations, the Big Cypress, Brighton, along the trail and over around Dania and Hollywood, there are 2,000 descendants of that courageous woman. This beautiful story, Lottie had one of her daughters tell me many years ago, and I cherish it and love Lottie for sharing it with us. We call Polly, this story about Polly, the Evangeline of the Everglades. Now, they are selling their beautiful Seminole attire, beads, bracelets, dolls, aprons, dresses, things up over here. And I hope you go over and visit with them and talk to them. Frank, Lottie, and Polly. Let's give them a hand. a Florida folk festival without a few little old tale tellers. And one of our most famous one, my goodness, Charles Kuralt went down to see not very long ago, and he was on national television, and doggone it, I didn't know it. So I didn't get to see him. He was on the evening show. Frog is quite a fella. No, I gotta back up. Tain't Frog at all. But I'm going to dip way down to Miami and bring one of our finest folk singers who learned his songs in the traditional way from his grandmothers, his mother, his family in Louisiana and Mississippi. Let's welcome to the stage Robert Dixon.
Good afternoon. It's raining here, storming on the deep blue sea. Lord, it's raining here, storming on the deep blue sea. There ain't no black-headed mama can make a fool out of me. Oh, delay, delay, oh, delay, delay. Now I can see that train coming down the railroad track. I see that train coming down the railroad track. And I love to hear the bark of that old smokestack. Oodley, dley, oodley, dley. I may need clothes, I may need hat and shoes. I may need clothes, I may need hat and shoes. Makes no difference what I need, I'll ever sing the blues. Oh, delay, delay, oh, delay, delay. Okay, I was supposed to play the psaltery, but Cousin Thelma, I'm going to play that tomorrow morning. That's all right. That psaltery is in bad shape. I hauled it from Miami in the sunshine, and it really needs tuning. These freight train songs are right out of Meridian, Mississippi. Jimmy Rogers songs. I moved to Meridian, Mississippi in 1955. Music supervisor there and taught in a junior college and met all of Jimmy Rogers' people. I never met him, but all of his people. And that's the type of thing that he did coming out of Meridian in about 1928 and appeared on the scene for about 5 years and died of tuberculosis. One of his songs was Frankie and Johnny. I think there are a lot of modern-day Frankies and Johnnies where I live. At least there's always a lot of shooting where I come from. Frankie and Johnny were sweethearts. Oh, Lordy, how they did love. Swore to be true to each other, as true as the stars above. He was her man, he wouldn't do her wrong. Frankie went down to the corner just for a bucket of beer. She said, Mr. Bartender, has my loving Johnny been here? He's my man, he wouldn't do me wrong. I don't want to cause you no trouble, I ain't gonna tell you no lies. I saw your lover an hour ago making love to Nellie Bly. He's your man, but he's doing you wrong. Frankie looked over the transom. She saw to her surprise, there on the cot sat Johnny, making love to Nellie Bly. He was her man, but he was doing her wrong. Frankie drew back her kimono. She took out a little 44. A Rudy toot toot three times. She shot right through that hardwood door. She shot her man, 'cause he was doing her wrong. Bring out your rubber-tired horses. Bring out the driver and hack. Taking my man to the graveyard, but I ain't gonna bring him back. I shot my man, 'cause he done me wrong. Bring out 1,000 policemen, bring them around today, to lock me down in a dungeon cell and throw that key away. I shot my man, 'cause he done me wrong. Frankie said to the warden, what are they going to do? The warden, he said to Frankie, it's the electric chair for you. You shot your man, 'cause he was doing you wrong. This story has no moral. This story has no end. This story just goes to show that there ain't no good in women. She shot her man, 'cause he was doing her wrong. Another blues song, like the first one. One of the blue yodels of Jimmy Rogers. Portland, Maine is just the same as sunny Tennessee. Portland, Maine is just the same as sunny Tennessee. Any old place I hang my hat is home sweet home to me. Oh-de-lee, de-lee, oh-de-lee, de-lee. I went to the depot and looked up on the board. I went to the depot and I looked up on the board. It says it's good times here, but it's better on down the road. Oh, delay, delay, oh, delay, delay. I'll eat my breakfast here, get my dinner new Orleans. Eat my breakfast here, get my dinner new Orleans. You're gonna get me a mama I ain't never seen. Oh, da-dee, da-dee, oh, da-dee, da-dee. Where was your mama when the train left the shed? Where was your mama when the train left the shed? Standing in my front door, wishing to God I was dead. Oh, da-dee, da-dee, oh, da-dee, da-dee. If my house catch a fire, there ain't no water around. If your house catch a fire, there ain't no water around. Just put my truck out the window, let the house burn on down. Oh, da-dee, da-dee, oh, da-dee, da-dee. If that's your mama, you better tie her to your side. If that's your mama, better tie her to your side. 'Cause if she flags my train, I'm sure gonna let her ride. Thank you. This is not a Jimmy Rogers song. This is a Cisco Houston song, but of the same period, 1930s. All the way out there. A lonely spot I know where no man will go. Where the shadows have all the room. I was riding free on the old SP, softly humming a southern tune. When a man came along, made me hush my song, kicked me off away out there. Set down my load in the desert road, rested my weary legs. Then I watched that desert sun make the tall shadows run out on that barren plain. Then I hummed a tune to the rising moon. It's so lonesome way out here. Starlit skies, lost myself in dreams. I dreamed that desert sand was the milk and honey land. Then I woke up with a star. There was a train coming back on that one-way track, gonna take me away from here. Passing by, I caught her on the fly, made for an open door. Then I looked around at that hot desert ground, the place I would be no more. As I was riding away, I heard the pale moon say, it's so lonesome way out here.
Back up, I was talking all about Frog. Frog lives down at North Fort Myers, and he's not only a capital storyteller, he knows more about everything than most people, and he talks more than most people. He's an artist, he's a writer, you name it, he's it. Let's welcome your friend and my friend, Frog Smith from North Fort Myers.
As an old frog, see? That's why I brought you a little present.
Did you bring me a frog?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Frog. Thank you very much.
Thank you, man. You're welcome. Don't thank me. You're welcome. I hope that frog keeps you company and don't fall off of that tree limb he's on. Folks, a funny thing happened to me on the on the way up here just before I got here. Most folks say it happened to them as they're on the way to the stage. But this didn't happen before. I had to go in the hospital. You know, that's no fun. So I went in the hospital and came out all in one piece, but they left a long string of rivets in me to try to keep me from leaking. And I came out of the hospital and stayed about 2 weeks, and then I found out I was diabetic. I had a blackout, and I had to go back. Well, to keep from showing partiality from one hospital to the other, I went back in the other hospital. And both of those nurses in there in both hospitals were the bloodthirstiest girls I ever saw in my life. When I went into that last hospital, the other one had me just about drained dry. They met me with open arms, had a syringe in each one of them wanting to get blood out of me. But they just drained my arm down till it went flat, so they went to pouring orange juice and apple juice in me. But that didn't turn red enough for blood, so all they got out of that was fruit sweetening that, so they just went back up again that and gave me tomato juice. Well, that nurse pulled blood all out of that arm and the blood all out of this arm till both of them went dry, and tomato juice didn't substitute for blood. So what did she do? She gave me 2 glasses of prune juice and went home for 3 days. But now to get back to a little bit of sense now, why don't we? You know, one of the first questions that's ever asked me, in fact, Charles Carroll asked me the same question. What did your folks down here eat before we had, before the northern people came down here to bring some money down here? Well, we didn't need money back then. The woods were full of wild game. You could have wild turkey there. You can't have that today because you can't find it. We could have plenty of quail. We had wild hogs down here, and if you don't know what good eating is, you should eat a piece of razorback hog. Of course, now, all these old razorbacks are too thin to fry. In fact, you see one of them walking around in the woods, he looked kind of like Grandpa's old mule used to look. Grandpa's old mule was so thin, you had to spread a blanket over him, keep the wind from blowing the hay out of it. So, in order to fry that wild hog, razorback, you had to go and get a bear. You'd shoot a bear then. You could shoot the bear that had been raised in your kitchen and get even with him. That's about the only way you could anyway. And now in the later days here, since the bear are just about all gone and the razorback hogs are all gone, you got to buy this short-nosed hog around here. It'll fry itself, but the razorback wouldn't. You had to have some grease to fry that in. But folks complain about a swill-fed hog that eat the scraps from the table and drank the dishwater. They say it's too greasy. But if the meat weren't greasy, what in the world are you going to fry it in down here? And then you take these folks from Georgia came down here. A lot of them had to leave Georgia in the dark of the moon and come down here. Well, they were raised on collard greens and cornbread and fatback bacon with the buttons left on it. And they came off down here, and they married by accident or intermarriage. They joined families for these Florida crackers down here and learned to eat what they eat down here. They eat everything down here from raccoon to alligator tail. Well, you had a race of people that the Yankees couldn't starve out in 1865 right on to this day. They can eat anything that comes along here and thrive on it. And that's the trouble. I've been living as long as I have. I've been living around here for a long time. I've been here way over 80 years, and I don't know how much longer the good Lord is going to let me stay here, but I'm trying to stay here while I won't get in his way, and maybe he'll welcome me when I do get up there. And I've always eaten everything come along. I remember back in 1917, I got up on 4th of July. Now, I only weighed 120 pounds at that time. I ate 14 fried eggs, sopped out the dish. I lost count of the biscuits, and I went on out and worked in the woods cutting cordwood until noon. I went back in and ate my normal lunch. It was just as good as ever. I went back to the woods. I worked until 5 o'clock that afternoon, and I had a wonderful time out there in the woods cutting the cordwood. And I came back in. It was out all over town that I was nothing but a glutton. Well, the storekeeper, he offered, if I'd drink a half a case of soda pop, he said he'd pay for it. Well, that would be 12 bottles. I drank 13, and you locked the ice box. And in case these young people want to know what a fella could hold back in those days, and he locked the ice box, and everybody calling me a glutton. So I asked a school teacher if she knew the difference between a gourmet and a glutton. Yeah, she did, but nobody else did. So because I kept all I ate and drank, well, I became a gourmet instead of a glutton, and I enjoy my life right on that way. One time I went into a restaurant down here in Fort Myers, and they advertised chicken dumplings, old-fashioned style. When the waitress brought it round, she asked me how I liked the old-fashioned chicken and dumpling. I said I liked them just fine, that the old-fashioned chicken and dumplings were just what they claimed to be, but the portion was far too modern. People just can't hold a lot of food like they used to down here. And back when we lived in a boarding house down here, the fellow with the longest reach got the most food. He'd just say, pardon my reach, but ain't it a good one. He'd reach over and get the best portion, the biggest part and everything. Well, the fellow down here in them old-time sawmill boarding houses like we used to have, the man that could eat the most and reach the farthest, he was called the biggest eater in there, they called a glutton. Well, the man that the landlady and the waitresses hovered over the most, he was called a star boarder. That could be where this term movie star started, because the movie stars, you know, they're always the most popular round about. And I learned that there was a lot to be learned by if you ate anything, don't throw it away, just keep it down you. And I've lived to a ripe old age now, and I'll live to see us traveling from the ox cart and the mule and the wagon to the automobile. From that, I've seen them flying on the planes. In fact, my first plane ride was up to Washington to the bicentennial up there. As we went over to Georgia up there, I told this stewardess that served our lunch, I said, I'm not a vegetarian. I said, how about dropping my salad off in Georgia, because I know the folks down there are tired of Carter's peanuts. Well, she said she promised me she would, and after they quit laughing in the plane, she come back and asked me why I didn't eat vegetables. I told her because I wasn't in a rabbit myself. I had long ears, all right, and a long tongue. Well, she left there. She was as flustered as an old hen we had on our farm up in Georgia before I come to Florida. This old hen, she was sassy old hen, and she knew good and well that what she was eating wasn't good for her. She was eating Carter's peanuts up there, and she knew if he found her nest in his field that he would get all the eggs and she wouldn't get to hatch any bitties out of them. She stole a nest off back of the field down there on a big bunch of wiregrass down there. That big drooping bunch of wiregrass, and she laid a whole full setting of egg in there. Well, those setting of eggs were a little bit too much for that bunch of wiregrass. There was a gopher hole under the wiregrass, and those eggs just slipped through the wiregrass right on down the gopher hole. Well, she went on down the gopher hole looking for eggs and met the gopher, and they made a compromise, an agreement. He would set on the eggs at night, and she'd set on them in the daytime while he was out feeding. It worked out just wonderful. Those eggs, every one of them hatched off perfect. But by that gopher setting on them and taking such an interest in them, when they hatched, that was the first flying gophers ever seen in Georgia.
See, I told you. Thank you for that, Frog. I'll remember you always. I hope he doesn't scare me to death when I wake up in the middle of the night. Last year, for the first time, we had a marvelous group come from St. Petersburg, the Ukrainian choir and dancers, and we are delighted that they are back again this time. And so let's welcome, without more ado, to the stage, the St. Petersburg Ukrainian choir and dancers under the direction of Bodan Bembo.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, friends and cousins. We are bringing you greetings from the Ukrainian American Association from St. Petersburg. It's good to be with you again this beautiful sunny afternoon, and we'll bring you again our hearts in our few songs and in our lively Ukrainian dances. And now, according to the ancient Ukrainian tradition, we'll greet you with bread and salt.
Mm-hmm.